ladies and gentlemen. My name is
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation, show about recovery from childhood sexual abuse. And tonight I will be talking about triggers and grounding. First, I must state this is only peer-to-peer support. I'm not a doctor or pretend that I am. All I'm going to do is guide you through steps in recognizing feelings that are tucked away from this trauma that you might have happened to you in the past, and hopefully guide you onto a better path. And also, one of the big things why I'm here as well is I want people to understand that you're not alone, and there's other survivors out there, and they're willing to help one another to get you through this process, and especially if you want to come out and talk about it and deal with it once in your life. After I've had to hold on to it as many years as I have, and since I've come out with it, it's probably the best thing I've ever done for myself. And I'm doing nothing but looking forward. And I can say you can do the same thing if you've taken the same path I have and deal with it once and for all. So I hope you all had a good week. And like I said, tonight we're going to be talking about triggers and grounding. And I'm so happy to be here, grateful. Thank you to the Gatehouse and providing me the space and the time to do this. And that's where I am tonight. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse, right here on the Lakeshore in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. If you would like to pass me an email regarding any questions regarding the Gatehouse, or you can email the Gatehouse. You can email the Gatehouse at thegatehouse.org, or you can email me at personaltransformation@thegatehouse.org. Sorry, personaltransformation@thegatehouse.org. Thank you for that one. And now I guess we'll move on. What is a trigger? Trigger is something that happens to you in the present that reminds you of a traumatic event that happened in the past. Trauma lives in our body. A trigger is a part of your body, your nervous system, that is frozen in time, revealing the event of the past over and over again. It's like a record that has deep groove and, sorry, I can't even talk tonight. It's like a record that has a deep groove into its keep skipping. I can't even talk. Anyway, a trigger is something that's deeply embedded in you. And when something happens, it causes you to react in a weird or peculiar way. So that's basically what we're getting into here now. Everyone has triggers. Each person has their own unique combination of things that trigger them. Triggers can show up in the form of people, someone who reminds you of your abuser, for example, places, like enclosed places, situations, loud voices, noises, thoughts, emotions, physical sensations, and I'm sure there's a few other things you could throw in there on top of that. Triggers can bring up emotions, sensations, and thoughts that you've experienced during your abuse. Triggers can be something specific tied to the memory of a traumatic event, like a dark room, sexual activity, or just feeling afraid. They can also be something general, like in a crowd, a general fear of feeling, dread, etc. You can be triggered when you at least expect it, because triggers work unconsciously. And how? Getting triggered can set off upsetting emotions such as fear, anger, sadness, guilt, and shame. Getting triggered can set off physical sensations such as a racing heart, shortness of breath, and perspiring. When you know what your triggers are, you can prepare yourself in advance. For instance, you might be triggered when you're going to the dentist, for example. You can prepare yourself by practicing grounding exercises, such as deep breathing, positive visualizations, anything that will help you feel safe and cared for. You can do these same practices while sitting in the dentist chair or any other triggering situation. Knowing your specific triggers is a getaway to becoming empowered by your own life, ultimately knowing your triggers can liberate you. Now, last week we were kind of talking about journaling. Now, this is where this would really come in handy. As the examples I've stated, you could be out someplace, like with some friends or not friends, and hear a noise or somebody say something in the past anyway. But my point being, what I'm trying to get at here is that if you can't remember it, write it down. And then at least you know what triggers you or what sets you off and puts you into whatever state of mind that you fall into after the trigger. Now, your body after a while, your body after it's been through that kind of post-traumatic stress of child abuse, usually what it does, it holds on to it. So like a past traumatic event. For example, the circumstances surrounding your traumatic event, including sights, sounds, smells, and thoughts, have become embedded in your body through your nervous system. During your abuse, these connections have helped you cope and survive. Like, for example, I know myself. Now, I find, like, what triggers me, this is a really good example. I find, like, for example, if I'm in confrontation, that's a really, really good example coming from myself. I find that when I get into a major confrontation, I'll just run and hide, or I don't want no part of it. I'll walk away rather than deal with the confrontation. Because I just can't deal with it. I can more so now, obviously, because I've had some help. But in the past, that's what I would do. I would basically run away. I wouldn't confront my issue. I would just basically run away and not deal with it. And anyway, nevertheless, that's what I would do. Here's an illustration of this. Every time Sally was abused, for example, a fictitious name, she would look out the window at a tree in the backyard. The swaying of its branches and crackling in the breeze felt soothing and helped her with survival through the event. But as Sally grew older, certain trees now make him feel strangely uncomfortable, and she has stopped going to the park just because of nature giving her that kind of trigger, for example. That's kind of an odd example, but that's what's here. So basically, like as I've stated about myself, I get in a confrontation, it triggers me and sends me off in a tizzy. It's just the same thing as Sally. She going into the woods and hearing branches crackle and move, setting her off. Certain sights and sounds and smells send signs of danger through your body. Your thoughts and your feelings, these reactions try to warn you or to avoid danger. These warning signals were created during the original abuse with intention of keeping you safe. Creating certain skills to cope with your situation, but as you become an adult, these coping skills haven't grown along with the rest of you and are no longer helping. Instead, they are actually helping to keep you stuck in the past. Well, there's another key thing right there. I've talked about being stuck, and I've done this time and time again, more times than I can ever possibly count or even imagine, where I've come into a situation, whether it be confrontation as I've described, or if I was in a relationship, whether it be intimate or with a friend, and they would say something that made me feel uncomfortable, then I was off and gone. Or I would react in a weird, peculiar manner, not stating what, but nevertheless, that's what I would do. Again, that's a kind of a coping mechanism which I kind of developed over the years of having to hold this secret, and that's how I dealt with it. You can experience triggers in both internally and externally, for example. An internal trigger may be experienced as feelings of anger, anxiety, sadness, loneliness, and abandonment, frustration, vulnerability, a loss of self-control, a racing heartbeat, physical pain, muscle tension, being overcome by memories, etc. Those are pretty good examples. As far as the anger and anxiety, I talk about triggers. The anger kind of resonates with me as well, and so does the anxiety, and so does the sadness. The loneliness, absolutely. The abandonment, most definitely. Frustration, oh yeah, that slides right in there, beautiful. And the vulnerability. And then the loss of self-control sort of slides in place there. And the loss of self-control comes into place, then you'll have a tendency to react in, well, let's put it this way, not in a good manner towards yourself or other people. An external trigger, maybe an argument, seeing news news of an article that reminds you of your abuse, watching a movie or a TV show that reminds you of your abuse, seeing traumatic events such as a car accident, certain smells, and the end of a relationship, an anniversary, holidays. I can kind of relate to that, such as Christmas and birthdays, because I know I've struggled for that for many, 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 many years. Even as a child, as I've stated in the past, growing up, I remember my stepmother wondering why I was always so sad. Well, that's why I was sad, because I went through that traumatic experience, and I never felt I deserved it. And I'm sure others can relate to that quite cold-heartedly. Being in a specific place, seeing someone who reminds you of a person connected to your traumatic event. Yeah, I can relate to that again somewhat to a certain degree. As an adult, you can learn to disconnect from the old, stuck coping skills that are no longer working for you. You can learn new ways or reminders to ease the way back into a healthier, positive moods. Relationships, self-care, work, and concentration and more. Here's something you could do for yourself. Like I said, I can't emphasize on this enough. Talk about journaling. This is where it comes back to journaling. If you're able to do as I'm suggesting, then that will help you maybe in some way or manner try to figure out what's triggering you that makes you act irresponsible or any ill-mannered way is what I'm trying to get at. You'll find that by doing this, it will kind of help you get you back on track for what's going on inside your brain or what's going on in your feelings. Identifying your triggers. Trauma triggers are highly individual. Basically, I'm saying everybody's different, and that's kind of what this is saying. This is what I'm saying. What triggers you may not trigger other people. When it comes to your own triggers, it is helpful to know, for example, what types of situations you are in when you are triggered, for one example. What is happening around you at the time, as another example. What kind of emotions are you feeling in the moment, for example. What thoughts are you experiencing when you are triggered? What does your body feel like when this happens? Well, for example, like in this last example I gave you, I know that when I'm, well, this is where we talk about anxiety and fear and anger. I know that in deep down inside, I have this this awful gut-wrenching feeling that pretty much resonates right through my body. Well, it starts in my stomach and it works right up to my neck. And then if I hold on to that long enough, what happens after that is, I hold on to that those thoughts, I make myself numb. I'm sure there's some of you out there or all of you who have been through this experience can relate to that. I know that when it does happen to me, I cannot believe how much it pulls me down and out, and basically to the point where I don't want to function. What I mean by I don't want to function, I don't want to associate or talk with anybody. I just want to basically go into a room and I shut the door and I don't want to talk to anybody. Preparing for triggers that you expect to face. So this is why I talk about writing this stuff down. And if you know what triggers you, try to figure it out. So sometimes you know beforehand you're going to be in a situation that may trigger you. The following is a strategy to help manage your situations that you anticipate will be difficult or challenging. For example, now, if you know you're going to go into a situation that that's going to trigger you, I don't know, anything at all, I guess, you prepare yourself before you go to that situation. Or, for example, if you're going to go meet a relative or a friend, you know, that triggers you, well, you prepare yourself. What I mean by preparing yourself, what you got to do, for example, like in my case, what I've done, if I've known that I was going into a situation like that, especially now, this stage of the game, knowing what triggers me and what doesn't trigger me, if I know I'm going to go into a situation where I know I'm going to be triggered, so basically I psych myself out, or I acknowledge that individual is going to trigger me. So what I do is when I go there, I just kind of, well, what I do myself personally is I kind of just, I think of other thoughts. That works for me. It doesn't necessarily mean it'll work for you, but it does for me. So when I go into a situation, for example, where I'm with a friend, and I find when he starts talking negative, could be anything like that, what I'll do is I'll think about positive things. I'll think about something positive, like going fishing, and that kind of sidetracks me from falling back into the wayside, or falling back into that hook that drags me into the hole, as I just described about that awful gut feeling and going numb. And another thing you need to learn to try to do, as I've had to do, is let go of the worry that insinuates you to feel that way, or that triggers you to put you into that place. Accept that another thing you can do, or step three, accept that you will experience distress and know that it is possible to manage your reaction. So basically what I'm saying, or what this says, is that if you expect and know that when you meet this individual or situation, if you expect it, then it's not going to hit you as hard. In other words, it's not going to do as I've stated, like give you a gut-wrenching feeling, make you feel numb, give you anxiety, make you angry, and make you angry, all those different things. And what you need to do, for example, in step four, remind yourself of all your strengths, helpful resources, and healthy coping strategies. So basically, if you're spiritual, for example, use that as a grounding mechanism. We are going to get into grounding a little bit more throughout this program. A lot of grounding, actually, because it's so important to keeping you from letting these triggers happen. As I've explained about this last example, reminding yourself about all your strengths and helpful resources and healthy coping strategies, well, I just gave you an example of something that you could use to give you strength. If you're spiritual or religious in any manner, and you fall back on that to give you strength to go, as the example I've been giving you about meeting that individual or whatever the situation may be, to help you get through it, you'll find that works. Whatever your coping skill may be, find a way to deal with it. Basically, what you're doing is you're finding a way to deal with it. You're finding a way that it won't bring you down. Now, I've talked about journaling. Now, I can't emphasize about that enough, and I won't stop talking about that, because I know how very important it is in regards to getting past this, and by doing so, it helps you recognize it, and I know that by journaling, as I've done for myself, it helps immensely, not just in recognizing what triggers you, but it helps you. It's kind of like telling your story, as I've done for myself. I tell my story, and the more I've told my story, the more it's helped me along the path. Where telling my story, the more times I've said it, it's made it easier. And it's, for example, like I don't have any nightmares anymore, as an example. I don't know, it just doesn't make me feel as sad as it used to. And as I've stated, I've forgiven myself. That's something that if you haven't done, that you'll have to work on. But that's what I've done to help me through this process. And I haven't looked back since. I'm not looking back. I'm only looking forward. So, for example, when I talk about journaling, identifying your triggers. Now, if you can take the time and you have a pen and a piece of paper, for example, now if you were to write down some columns and between the stimulus or the events and the response, your behavior, and make another column, space for, here you go. I could do it this way. This is the easiest way to explain it to you. Okay, right off, make four columns, for example. One of them, be the left, being your trigger. And the second column, what's the thought process you're going through when you get this trigger. And the next column, you can write down what you're feeling in this process. And then your behavior. What do you do when all these things happen? And make a list, as I've stated. Maybe you don't have to do the way I've just described, but my point being is journaling or writing it down is a really healthy way of recognizing where you're coming from. And it's a really good starting point for moving on. By doing that, at least you'll get an idea, or you'll have some kind of, you'll know where you're at and what triggers you, and from there you can come up with some kind of compromise on how you're going to deal with it the next time you come across it. And that's what we're going to get into a little bit deeper now. I know you don't have a trigger scale there, but I have a trigger scale in front of me. For example, from 1 to 10, as I've described about your journaling, by writing it out, you can get an idea of where you are from the scale from 1 to 10, for example. From 0, you're feeling okay, and 10, well, worst case scenario, suicidal thoughts, and falling backwards towards okay, flashbacks, despair, and number 5, for example, anxiety, fear, and falling back to number 2, uncomfortable feelings and warning signs in your mind and body, as I've described earlier about the gut feeling and the numbness that you will feel by being triggered. And instead of numbing and disassociating and isolating and using alcohol, drugs, food, sex, self-harm or some kind of thing, or blaming yourself or others, so you might want to try slowing down. In other words, what I mean by slowing down, slow your thought process down. I've kind of covered this already a little bit. So think of another way of focusing, like such as your breathing. Reflecting on something else that gives you pleasure, like fishing, for example, or baseball in my case, or bowling, or something that distracts you from that trigger. Acknowledging, accepting your thoughts and feelings. So basically what I'm saying by that, okay, obviously you're feeling down, or rather you're feeling triggered, and recognize that, or accept that's what you feel. But at the same time, you're accepting that you have those thoughts towards that individual or whatever experience you're going through. Acknowledge it. Take it. Take it for what it's worth. And use it as a tool to change that. Instead of making a bad choice and running away, as I described in one of my examples, make a powerful choice rather than a poor reaction. In other words, make a positive reaction versus a negative reaction toward that situation that could be triggering you. And you'll find that will work over a period of time and a little bit of work. Now, I've talked about grounding briefly. Now, grounding is really important when it comes to being triggered. Because when you're triggered, good things don't happen. Life goes to hell in a handbasket just like that. Mainly towards yourself, and depending on how you react, others could fall into that as well. Myself, I've always, as I've stated, I'd always walk away, or I would, let me see, what else would I do? Depending on the confrontation, I would probably react poorly. Whether it be what I mean by that, would react poorly. I would react in a verbal response, and then that would just make things worse, rather than just shut up and let the person say whatever they're saying and then walk away, which would have been in most cases a better thing. And I can think even in my young years, oh my God. When I would behave ill-mannered, for example, I used to, I don't even like saying this, but I know a couple of times that I reacted in a bad manner. I would end up getting into a fight and I get my ass thrown in jail. That wasn't much fun. Not at all. As a bad example. I've done that more times than I care to even admit or describe, but nevertheless, that happened to me. And that, believe me, is not a way out or a way to deal with it. There's better ways of dealing with it, such as I described regarding to changing your thought process, find another way to think versus feeling negative and letting those negative thoughts drag you down. Now, I talked about grounding. Grounding is a set of simple strategies to manage emotional pain. Substance cravings, self-harm impulse, anger, sadness, etc. It works by focusing on here and now rather than the past or the future. Grounding is a form of centering yourself. Being grounded means being aware of your body, your feelings, and your thoughts. Now, when I talk about feelings and thoughts, that's kind of like what I described earlier about when I talked about journaling, about writing this stuff down. So when you see something coming up, you recognize it, and then you change your thought process. Carrying on, it is about being grounded in your own current reality rather than being lost in a powerful emotions that take you outside of the present moment. When you are in touch with your physical and emotional experience, you can keep yourself safe by being conscious and current experiencing allows you to make decisions about what you need to do for yourself. It's so true. When you get down like that however you may react when you're triggered, like everybody's different, obviously. I know with myself, I've given you some examples. There's people do all kinds of things. But I know by recognizing those triggers and by just the fact that you can recognize them, you're able to stop them. And it's amazing. I mean, totally, totally amazing how things change when you don't react in that manner that you may have reacted in the past. I mean, I know for myself, I'm still struggling with some things, and I won't say that I'm cured or I'm perfect, but I'm working on things. I still have a problem with a few things, but nevertheless, I know I still have trouble with confrontation, for example. One part of me still wants to just run away and walk away because I think that's the easiest thing to do because that's all I know, that's all I've ever known. But I'm telling you, that is not right. I know for the times that I've had confrontation, for example, especially in the last couple of years, how I deal with confrontation is, it's gotten easier. It's still hard, but it's gotten better. And by doing what I've stated about journaling, for example, I'm able to recognize it. And what I do to myself, to remind myself that I don't want to react in a bad manner, like, for example, like running away, I have to take some deep breaths, for example. And I might even step outside the door for a minute, but don't run, but not leave, like not walk away or run away, or I just change my thought process, and that I'm telling you, it does work. I've been trying to do this for the last, really concentrating on doing this for the last, especially the last 6 months, and I found that by doing these sort of things, it does change. And writing it down, journaling like I've described, is a really good way of coping, or at least recognizing or seeing it. But I mean, it's not like it's, you can write it down and keep your notes with you, but if you can write it down and keep mental note, that's a really good start. And for example, I think about all the times that I've walked away, and I think of how to change my thought process, how much things would be better for me now. What I mean by better for me now, in other words, I wouldn't still have that anxiety that I carry and that anger, or rather certainly wouldn't hold on to me to the degree that it does. But I'm telling you, though, I've been working on this really, really hard for the last 6 months, trying not to do the things I've done before. Not that I haven't been trying before, but I'm talking about is by working at it as hard as I have been, that's where I've noticed the change has been. And I've had situations where I could have just went awry or just done something stupid or who knows. But in other words, my point being is I didn't run away. I stayed. I dealt with it. I thought of different ways of keeping me grounded. So I didn't react in an ill-mannered way. Now, when you're in touch with your physical and emotional experience, let me start again. So when you are in touch with your physical and emotional experience, you can keep yourself safe. Being conscious in current experiences allows you to make decisions about what you need to do for yourself. This is what's great about being an adult. You can do things and make choices for yourself that you didn't, or rather that you couldn't as a child. You get to the experience, the pleasure and the power comes from taking care of yourself. There are many techniques to help you bring back to help bring you back to the present moment and discovers a miraculous thing. You are safe right now. Most survivors have used grounding techniques to get through difficult times. You might not even be aware that you have even used them. It is a good thing to become aware of what works for you. For example, some people find it helpful to carry a grounding object with them, as an example, such as a stone or a feather, anything at all, a coin, anything that keeps you grounded. This is something that that you can carry with you and that can remind you to bring you back to safety of the present moment and your current reality. Grounding objects can be anything, as I just described, a stone, feather, piece of wood, coin, or shell. Doesn't matter, anything to remind you to keep you grounded. Now here are some other examples of grounding ideas that people could use or you can include. For example, if you're sitting rubbing your feet on the floor, if you're sitting and talking with somebody, walking barefoot on the grass, provided you're in that situation, gardening or taking care of your house plants, keep you grounded. That's a fantastic thing. I love doing that. Smelling and soothing essential oils like lavender, oh, that's lovely too. Orient yourself to all here and now by answering simple questions such as what the date and time are, or where you are located, your full name, etc., for more examples. Calling a friend or crisis line, petting an animal like a dog or a cat, closing your eyes, imagining growing roots from your feet deep into the planet. Those are all really great examples of what you could do, or basically, as I've stated, find something that makes you feel good, either a past event or something that you can do that if you're in a situation that takes you out of that triggering moment. There's many different things you can do to alter your thoughts, and that's what I keep emphasizing on how much work is involved in this, to get you to change your thought process so you don't fall into that notion of despair. And my point being is there is a way you can change that thought process. By doing as I'm suggesting is a good example of what you could do to change that thought process. Requires a bit of thought process, a bit of wanting to change something about yourself, And that's what it's all about. You have to want to change that by doing these steps as I've described is a way to do it. Why are you grounding? Well, there's many good reasons to do that. For example, right off the top of my head, by grounding, example, you don't have to fall back into that, as I described about that horrible feeling in your stomach and numbingness that you're going to feel by falling into that trigger. When you're overwhelmed with emotion pain, you need a way to detach so you can quickly recover from those disturbing feelings and stay safe. Grounding anchors you to the present and to your current reality. Many people struggle with these feelings of either too much overwhelming emotions or memories, or too little numbing and disassociation. With grounding, you can achieve a balance between two. You become conscious of your reality and able to tolerate the overwhelming feelings. Remember that the pain is a feeling. Now that's kind of what I've been describing about my stomach and the numbness. It is not who you are. When you get caught up in emotions, it may feel like you are you may feel like you are in pain, as through pain is all that exists. Yeah, like that. Right? You're really stuck. And you can't get yourself out of those thoughts. That pain just persists and persists and persists and hangs on and hangs on and hangs on. And it's like a never-ending story or a scratch on a record where the record keeps playing over and over and over again. And after a while, as I've learned, it gets to be pretty damn boring and repetitive and absolutely, you know, you absolutely gain nothing but more pain and aggravation towards yourself. And what the hell, you know, where the hell is the fun in that? But pain is only a part of your experience. The other parts of your experience are only temporarily masked by the pain, but if you can get in touch with yourself, again, through grounding. Grounding can be done at any time, any place, anywhere, and no one has to know that you're doing these practices. And that's so true. Like, you know, you're out and about doing something, and some of the descriptions I've described to you regards to grounding to keep you focused so you don't react in the ways I've described will go a long way in keeping you from those nasty thoughts of despair. So basically I'm saying you must stay focused on the present rather than the past or the future. And that's so true. You got to concentrate on the moment you are in. You don't worry about your past, and more importantly, don't worry about your future either, because you're not in your future. You're in your present. Keep your eyes open. Scan the room. Turn the light on. Stay in touch with your present reality. That's an example if you're alone, or with your others. Obviously, you can't turn the light on. Ha ha ha. Whatever. But nevertheless, you got to stay present with your present reality. Stay neutral. Avoid judgments of good and bad. For example, instead of saying this room smells like a pipe, for example, my father smoked a pipe and he abused me over and over, for example. This horrible smell reminds me of my father's breath and what it did to me, for example. Simply stick to the facts of the moment and this room smells like a pipe and move on to the next observation. So, like I've been saying, if you find, like for example, your father smoked a pipe or somebody smoked a pipe and it reminds you or triggers you, focus on something else that keeps you from falling into that stigma of bad news, bad emotions. So rate your mood before and after grounding. Test whether it works, for example, like the scale I was talking about prior to reading this. If you know you're going into a situation, or you know a situation, even if you can do it without going there, and you notice how it feels you can rate it. And again, like I say, journal it, write it down, just to give you an idea where you're at as far as what makes you tick. Okay, so like I was saying, rate your mood before and after grounding, to test whether it works. For instance, before doing the practice, to rate yourself as a 7 out of 10 for feeling triggered in pain After grounding, you rate yourself as two out of 10 for feeling triggered and pain. Example, has your level of pain decreased? So on those scales I was talking about, and as mentioned, actually, I'll go back to it just to refresh your memory. And the trigger scale, as I've said, from a 0, you're feeling okay, 10 being worst case scenario, suicidal thoughts, and 7 and 8 being flashbacks and despair, halfways, anxiety and fear, and working down the line to number 2, you're feeling uncomfortable feelings and warning signs of mind and body, such as the feelings I've described for your gut and numbness. So, by doing so, if you're able to write that stuff down, it will help you recognize what triggers you and put you into that state. Using grounding practice as I've described, whenever you are faced with a trigger or enraged or disassociating or having a substance craving or whenever your emotional pain goes above the 6 as on the scale I've described, on a scale from 1 to 10, grounding puts a healthy distance between you and these feelings. You know, I give you an example of the scale of writing it down. And myself, which I've kind of been trying to describe how I do this to take myself out of that thought process where it doesn't drag me down, where it doesn't put me into that. When I talk about, I actually really want to think about it more. Like, what really works for me, I think about fishing. I can't say that I work for you, but that works for me. I think about going fishing. Because I know when I go fishing, for example, I don't have anybody around me. I don't have to talk to anybody. Or all I'm thinking about is just being one with nature. And I'll have you know, when I go fishing, I don't keep what I catch. I'm a catch and release kind of person. I'm all about I'm about sports to a certain degree, but as much as I like fish, I don't normally keep. I catch and release. That's what I do. It's all about the sport of catching it and the thrill of catching it. That's what helps keep me grounded. And what makes it even more exciting for myself, I don't expect everybody to know about fishing, but for the ones that do know, for example, like I'll go out there and I'll use the lightest rod I can find so that whatever I catch, it could be a fish 100 pounds, for example, a gross exaggeration, might I say, but nevertheless, a big fish is what I'm getting at. And even a little fish feels like a big fish when I catch that thing. And that's what really helps me. And then you concentrate on bringing that fish in. That's what helps me break that stigma of thinking, those thoughts that we've been talking about. When triggered, avoid talking about feelings. When triggered, avoid talking about feelings or journal writing at this time. You want to stay away from distressing feelings, not get in touch with them. Processing feelings can happen later. Grounding is not the same as relaxation. Grounding is much more active, focus on distraction strategies, and it's intended to help manage extreme feelings. So, as I just described with this fishing story I was talking about what I do when I go fishing, that's what helps keeps me grounded. So when I'm sitting in some place or I'm in a situation, that's what I do. I think about going fishing. And that works for me every time. And as I've stated earlier, in the last 6 months, I've really had to work on this in order to change that thought process where I wouldn't run away from my problems such as that, as I'm describing. No, and it actually does work. I'm telling you, it does work. But at the same time, and I can't emphasize on this enough again, it takes a hell of a lot of work. I've been working on this for a long time, and it's actually finally starting to work. Now, this is where, another thing I'm going to talk about later on in time, I talk about my brain short-circuiting or your brain short-circuiting or neuroplasticity as a form of, if I want to get clinical, about your brain shorting out and making you short out and fall back onto old bad habits that make you act in that ill-mannered way. It is so important to recognize those thoughts and feelings so you can get a handle on what's going on. And I'm telling you, with a little bit of work and a lot of patience, and of course, most importantly, time. You can change that stigma. I'm telling you, you can. It's so easy to do. Well, writing it down, but it's the working part. That's the hard part. It's so hard. It's so hard. I mean by so hard, trying to sort that out. That's why I say it takes time. So that's why I keep insisting that you need to write this stuff down. A simple set of strategies to manage your emotional pain. Like from substance craving, self-harm, impulses, anger, sadness. It works by focusing on the things I kind of was describing about, like rubbing your feet on the floor, walking barefoot in the grass. Just find something to focus on, something to change that thought process. And that's why I keep falling back on you need to find something to change that thought process. Now, I've also talked, or rather mentioned, about deep breathing, a deep breathing exercise. And I'm going to quote this from Anxiety and Phobia Workbook from 2005 by E. Born. So I'm quoting somebody by saying this. So we are in a tense, when we are tense, we breathe shallowly and rapidly. We relax and we breathe more fully and deeply from the abdomen. By using deep abdominal breathing, we stimulate the relaxing response of our bodies. We're promoting calmness, and additionally, attending to the breathing, to our breathing helps with connecting our minds to our bodies. By following these exercises, may help you change your breathing pattern, especially if you practice regularly. Just in 3 minutes of deep breathing practice, will usually induce the state of relaxation. Well, I can kind of relate right to that. Now, I give you an example of, I think, about fishing, but I know from my martial arts experience in the past, that's where my breathing, where I really learned how to do my breathing, because everything is done from inside your stomach, below your abdomen. It's all controlled from your breathing. So basically, when you're exerting yourself, whether it be physically or emotionally, by controlling your breathing can determine, basically, after a while in practice, can determine your final thought process, whether it be bad or good. But from my experience, by doing as I described, it's all been a positive. It's all been in the positive. So look at it that way. And that's an actual fact. That's what happens to you by practicing your breathing exercises, as I've stated. So if you practice for 3 to 5 minutes every day, at least for 2 weeks, it is possible to find a regular time to do this on a daily basis, so it will become a habit. So basically, if you do it every day and remind yourself to do it, and you make it a habit, I'm telling you, over a period of time, like I've stated, like for journaling, it will help you. For practice, it'll help you in a short period of time. So in other words, it won't be months. It'll be like within a couple of weeks, as for example. But you must do this every day in order for it to help. Once you feel you've gained some mastery when applying what you feel in stress with anxious or experience an onset of panic symptoms, by extending your practice of breathing exercises to a month or longer, you will be able to begin retaining yourself to breathe from your abdomen. The more you can shift the center of your breathing from your chest to your abdomen, the more consistently you will feel like you've relaxed on an ongoing basis. Breathing exercise. For example, start by noticing a level of tension in your feeling now. Place one hand on your abdomen, just below your rib cage, for example. Inhale slowly and deeply through your nose and into the bottom of your lungs. In other words, send the air as low down as you can. If you're breathing from your abdomen, your hand should actually rise. Your chest should move only slightly while your abdomen expands. In abdominal breathing to the diaphragm, the muscle that separates the lung's captivity from the abdominal captivity moves downward. In so doing, causes the muscles surrounding the abdominal cavity to push outward. So basically, what I'm saying is, put your hand to the bottom, like below your belly button, and take slow, deep breaths through your nose, bottom of your lungs, and when you're releasing it slow, you can feel it go up your stomach. But if you put your hand, for example, like where I have it right now, and you take a deep breath, like I am now, and slowly breathe it up. What I mean by slowly, go slow, and you can feel it literally going up your chest. So if you put your hand, like I say, below your belly button, and exhale as I've just done, and I'm telling you, if you put your hand and you go up, and you can literally feel the breath go out. When you've taken in a full breath, pause for a moment, and then exhale slowly through your nose and mouth, as I've stated. Depending on your preference, be sure to exhale fully. As you exhale, allow your whole body just let go. So like I'm saying, at the same time, as an example, if you feel your air going up through and then back out through your nose and your lungs, feel your body and see what it does. And you'll notice that after you do this for a while, I'm telling you, if you practice it, you'll notice a huge difference on how you feel. In other words, your anxiety will drop. Your stress will drop, for example. And throw another little piece into this as well. Like I said, make sure you exhale fully. As you exhale, allow your body, your whole body, just to let go. You might visualize your arms and your legs going loose and into a limp like a rag doll. So that's the idea behind relaxing. So you go into these deep breathing exercises, whether you're, as an example, you can lay down, you can sit down, where you're comfortable. You find a comfortable position, you're sitting. Find a comfortable position that you feel comfortable in, whether you're sitting down or laying down. I find by sitting up, but I put my hands on my knees, my hands facing up, and what I do is I leave my eyes open, it's up to you. I leave my eyes open sometimes, I close my eyes sometimes. It depends on the anxiety I might be feeling. So by doing so, and doing those breathing exercises, it helps change my thought process. Okay. So do 10 slowly, for example. Do 10 slow, full abdominal breaths. So try to keep your breathing smooth and regular without gulping in big breaths or letting your breath all out at once. So like I say, when I talk about controlled breathing, we say like in and then your hands on your below your belly button as I described, slowly let it out. That's how it works. So don't take big gulps. Slow and easy is how it works. I'm telling you, it does work with some practice and time. It will help you slow your breathing down and your anxiety, as I've described. You're breathing slowly. Count to four as you inhale, for example, and count slowly to four again as you exhale. So like 1, 2, 3, 4, slowly breathing in, and 1, 2, 3, 4, breathing out, nice and slow. Remember to pause briefly at the end of each as you inhale and exhale. If you start to feel lightheaded, stop and breathe normally for about 30 seconds before starting again. So don't breathe like an animal, so you get no oxygen. Hard to breathe that air in and out, but if you breathe too fast, you'll make yourself lightheaded and you'll fall over. But nevertheless, I'm telling you that works as far as getting yourself focused again. So basically what you're trying to do is you want calm breathing, slow, relaxed breathing. And I'm telling you, it'll work after a while. The calming breathing exercise will adapt. This calming breathing exercise I'm going to describe now was adapted from an ancient discipline of yoga. So those of you who've done yoga or have ever tried yoga, well, this is just another form of control of yourself, like such with the breathing as I've been describing. It's a very efficient technique for achieving deep state of relaxation quickly. And like I've stated, I've done this several times, and I find that it does work. I know that in my past that I've done that, I used to do the martial arts, it works really well to stay focused and controlled, and it does work immensely. Okay, where am I here? Let me just do this one little thing here. It appears. Okay. Breathing from your abdomen. Inhale through your nose as I've described. Okay, well, this is just another version of what I'm talking about, but this is from yoga as I've just described. And what yoga tells you to do is breathing from your abdomen, I should say. Inhale through your nose slowly and count to five. Then you pause and hold your breath and count to five again. As I just described, where I was using a four count, this is a five count, so basically you're going a little slower. The whole idea is you don't want to breathe fast. Like I say, if you breathe too fast, you're going to get lightheaded and you're going to fall over. And after you've done that for a couple of times, and then take a couple of normal breaths to put you back on track again, just so you're not, like I say, you could become lightheaded and fall over. Repeat the steps at least 1 to 4 times, at least 3 to 5 minutes. So you practice this, and over a period of time, you will notice a difference in your relaxation in regards to what I've been describing throughout this whole process. This should involve at least 10 times you should do this. If you're sitting in your chair or on the edge of your bed or on the couch, do at least 10 times. To get yourself focused. Please try that anyway. Okay, as you continue, you may notice that you can count higher than five or longer. So basically with practice, you'll find that your counts will last longer. But again, like I say, you have to practice it in order to achieve this goal as I'm describing. An exhaling, then inhaling, allow these vibrations in your counting to occur. If you start feeling lightheaded, stop breathing. Stop and breathe normally for 30 seconds before starting again. Well, as I keep describing, like I say, if you feel lightheaded, stop and breathe normal and start over again. Through the exercise, keep your breathing smooth and regular without gulping in breaths or breathing out in gusts. So this is what's really, really important, right, which I keep describing. It's all about slow, controlled breathing. And that's what you're trying to achieve in order to achieve what we're talking about. Another option, for example, each time you exhale, you may wish to stay relaxed or calm or let go or any word or phrase silently to yourself. In other words, you don't have to blurt it out. If it makes you feel comfortable, blurt it out. But you can keep it to yourself. If you don't want others to know what you're doing, for example, allow your whole body to let go as you do this. If you keep this up each time you practice, eventually just saying you're relaxing, word alone will bring on a mild state of relaxation. So I've just given you like kind of two different examples, well, one coming from yoga and the other one, as I've stated, coming from the anxiety and phobia workbook from eBourne, which was published in 2005. By practicing these things will be a basis of keeping you grounded. Now, I haven't really touched too much on this, but this is important because since we're talking about grounding, self-care is so important on top of that. You got to have self-care.
without self-care, you don't have what I'm talking about. You can't stay grounded. You have no control. Well, this is a way of being, keeping yourself in control. A form of self-care. Actions and reflections with focus on pause is kind of what I'm talking about. Throughout this process, you'll be utilizing the various tools such as pause and mindfulness. I also encourage you, or we all encourage you at the Gatehouse, to apply these principles to your daily lives. The way of the pause. Remember that the pause means paying attention or unrevealed scared experiences. Now I'm quoting Art Lockhart from 2002. As you will learn later in the group, or rather later, as I'm describing the scared path component, the pause exercise is a simple way of responding to obstacles as we seek out our sacred path. So, we've been talking about triggers. Now, when you're triggered, for example, you need to, when I talk about pause, it's funny how I know throughout the house here, pause is this. We always focus on the pause, to keeping you grounded. It's always included in the process and being mindful. But basically what I mean by that is, now if you're being triggered, and again I'm going to fall back to what I've talked about, that when you, if you're able to journal and recognize the things that trigger you, again, this is where this will come in handy. Once you've figured out what triggers you, and you recognize it, then this is where the pause will come in, where the pause and for the mindfulness comes in. If you recognize it, then you can pause and say to yourself, okay, well, I have to change my thought process to something more grounding, as I've been talking. And this is where the mindfulness comes in as well. You know, you need to basically apply the principles I'm talking about. So if you pause and you apply the mindfulness, then these steps, as I've been taking you through, will actually work over a period of time and work. But you must, I repeat, you must practice these things in order to accomplish this, what I'm talking about. The way to pause. Remember that the pause means paying attention to your unveils the scared experiences. Again, this is by Art Lockhart, 2002. You will learn later from this that I'm talking about. The pause is an exercise, simply a way of responding to the obstacles as we seek out our sacred path. Throughout this process, we ask you to do the following, or this is what I suggest you do, and this is what the Gatehouse suggests that you do. When you encounter an obstacle, such as a trigger, as we've been talking about, sometimes that hinders you in a way, shape or form, simple pause by saying to yourself, I am here, I am now, how do I make this better? In the initial stage of your pause, give attention to your breathing, as we've been talking about, and see yourself as having an important task of ensuring that that air leaves and enters your body as if it were a scared life-affirming experience. So basically, like, that's what I've been talking about. Falling back on triggering, grounding, recognizing what sets you off. So you recognize what sets you off, and you do the breathing exercise as I've described as an example, or any other thing, whether it be a coin or a feather, many different examples I've talked about to bring you back to the pause of just being, to pausing and to the mindfulness. Be mindful of what's going on. So, okay, where am I here? Okay, the power of the pause. Initially, you begin your response with, how will I create a healthy response to this obstacle? For example, Take a time that is good for you and write out your experience. I've talked about journaling, and we're falling back to this again. Write out your experience down and what you've learned about yourself. One of the questions you can ask yourself is, how do you free yourself from limiting these thoughts and behaviors? Well, this is where, again, I can't emphasize enough about journaling. This is why I talk about work. This is work right here. This is what you need to do, as I've done for myself and others I know have gone through the same process. You need to write this stuff down in order to free yourself from this crap that you've been carrying all your life, or as long as you've been carrying it. You need to. This is a way that you can figure this stuff out, so you don't have to carry this anymore, or so you don't have to behave in the manner that you may behave, or as I've behaved. This is a process that I've done to get past this. Now I'm going to give you an example activity that you can do. Maybe with yourself, you can think or discuss an obstacle in your life. Write it down as an example. And if you did write it down, and you found a way, as for example, did you overcome this obstacle? And if so, how did you do it? And in your writings, describe how you would overcome this obstacle by applying this principle of pause. So basically, when I talk about writing and journaling, again, falling back to what I started from the beginning, if you're able to write down what triggers you and what sets you off, then you can apply this principle of pause, is what I'm talking about. But you need to know where you're at in order to achieve this. Remember that the obstacles in our lives are opportunities over learning and personal growth and development. So basically, by doing this stuff I'm talking about, you're learning about yourself. You're learning what's going on. What's making you tick? And without knowing that, how can you move forward? Now really think about it. If you don't know what's going on, how can you possibly move forward? Like, I know it sounds difficult and it sounds awkward and it might even be uncomfortable. Well, to be honest with you, if it's uncomfortable, then there's something going on. It's that simple. It makes you feel uncomfortable. It's that simple. There's just something going on. That's why you need to write it down so you can sort this out. If you can write it down, for example, as an example I've been giving you, then there will definitely be a way. Like, you will see it. It'll be right in front of your eyes. What's holding you back? What's keeping you from changing that thought process? And I think you'll be amazed with yourself when you see this and you write this stuff down and you recognize, well, what triggered you? What made you go off? What made you act in a bad way that you even feel bad about, but you feel guilty about? That you might have pissed somebody off in your family, your girlfriend, your friend, whatever, just from your behavior. But only from what something they might have said or something they would have done. And if you do these steps like I'm talking about, I'm telling you that it'll make a difference. But it takes work. It takes a lot of work. And one of the processes, as I keep describing and keep falling back on, is you have to recognize what makes you that, what sets you off. And this, I guess, you know, this is not for everybody. What I mean by this is not for everybody is, if you're willing to figure it out, then go ahead and do it. But if you're not, well, then you're going to stay back where you are. You're not going to move forward. And this is what the whole process is. You can't move forward without recognizing these things. And I'm telling you, by doing these things that I've described, will help you in that process. Now, I'm only giving you an example of what you can do to figure this out. If you know another way or can think of another way or find another way, I highly encourage you to do so. But this is an example of what I'm giving you now to help you move forward. So if you take a moment and reflect upon what you've discussed or written down. Do the activity as I've described. So basically, if you write this stuff down, then you can figure out where you're at, and then you're back. Then you're on some kind of path that will help you get past this. But I must really, I really must say at the same time, the amount of work that's involved in it is not a lot of work on my part, and I've seen other people go through the same thing. And like, don't let me scare you with this work thing, because it's no more scary. It's actually, it's not as scary as the past that you might have been living in, or as I lived in. I can tell you that right off the bat. And what I've learned through this process, and this is a much safer route to be versus falling back in those old stigma of being stuck on what scares you or gives you fear or gives you anger. I'm telling you, with good hard work and recognizing what's going on, or at least recognizing what's going on, you can get past that. But you must take the time for yourself to figure it out in order to move forward. Now, please take a moment and reflect about what I was talking about. And if you can, if you recognize the things I've been talking about, if you apply the pause, as I've stated, and mindfulness, those obstacles that are holding you back will change in many different ways, which you never thought possible. I mean, I don't care if you're driving a car or walking. You can apply all these things anytime, anywhere. Even just people around you. You can do it, and people will never even know you're doing it. They'll not have a clue what you're thinking about. Now, I think that when you recognize these behaviors, as I've stated, things will change. Now, you can't be hard on yourself and think that by not doing these things as I'm suggesting will not help. And I'm telling you that if you just let go of that fear, that nothing will help or push you ahead, well, I hate to tell you, but you're wrong. And I'm an example of that. And I know others that have gone through the same thing, have done as I'm talking about, and it's worked. It's just over a period of time and a lot of work. Now, let's talk a little bit more about disassociation. Now, I kind of touched base with it a little bit. Now, from my past experiences with disassociation, now I'll give you an example of disassociation if you don't know what it is. So this is what disassociation is. And I've done lots of this in the past, so I really understand and know all about this in regards to myself as concerned. Now, what I mean by disassociation is that somebody close to you or somebody you know, you are in their lives in some way or fashion, and then suddenly you disappear, and then you're unreachable, there's no talking to you. That's what I mean by disassociation. Or, for example, like if you, I don't know, just plain ignoring the person. I guess, you know, I'd rather use the word ignore, because that's what you end up doing, is you ignore. You don't talk. You don't associate. That's what you do with that other individual or people. You do when you disassociate. And I'm telling you, when I think about all the times that I've done that, it makes me feel just rancid, horrible. And that's the great thing about my talk about when you go and when you recognize what triggers you, that's one thing you'll stop doing. Because I've done so much of it in the past. I get close to somebody or let myself go as far as I can, as far as getting close is concerned, and then I just run away. And you know, to be honest with you, I'm tired of doing that. I don't want to live my life like that anymore. I really don't want to carry myself out that way in a manner, because I really, deep down, I want to be loved and liked by anybody, just like anybody else. And if I can't let myself go or let myself trust like that, then how can I achieve that? And I say the same thing to you out there as well. If you have that disassociation, or rather when you're triggered and you disassociate yourself with other people as I'm describing, then how can you move forward? Like, really, how can you move forward? So if you apply the pause and your mindfulness, you apply that when you're triggered, it will help you over a period of time. Now, I'm just trying to think now, how much more can I beat this than what I've done already? I think what I'd like to do now that I've talked about this, is I was very, very fortunate back about, I guess it'd probably be about a year and a half ago, maybe almost 2 years ago. I was very fortunate. This author, I've talked about her already before, and I'll mention her again. I'm still hoping that I can interview her at some point in time. I'm talking about Deb Mayberry. Deb Mary, her last book she released, which I was grateful and honored that to be part of, and where I was able to say my story, it's called Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse by Deb Mayberry. And if you want to order this book, all you have to do is go to debmayberry.com, and it'll link you to where you can get the book and purchase the book. I was very fortunate enough to, she let me say my story, but there's a couple of things I'd like to read in here. By one thing I'd like to read, it's very, by a young lady, and her name is Faith, and she's only 10 years old, and she wrote this, poem, and I'd like to share it with you. I used to be insecure, shy, secretive. I was scared they were going to judge me if I spoke. Scared they weren't going to listen. There were so many things going on through my mind. So many things I wanted to say, but always too shy. So Finally, I said something. What I did was, I got sidetracked there. Sorry about the phone. Let me start over again. Forgive myself. Okay. I used to be insecure, shy, and secretive. I was scared they were going to judge me if I spoke. Scared they were going to listen. There were so many things going on through my mind, so many things I wanted to say, but was always too shy. So I finally said something, and when when I did, they all listened. They all helped me get better. Child abuse is the thing that can make you shut down, and hide from the world. When I spoke about it, I felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. I'm no longer an insecure person that I used to be. I'm no longer shy, secretive, or wanting to be alone. I am in school clubs and school sports teams. I volunteer, and I'm not afraid to sign up for new things. I have so many friends. I am not afraid to go out into the world without fear and being judged. Talking about it helped me in so many ways that I am
no longer quiet, wanted the group. I speak my mind and stick up for people, and for all the things I believe in, I want you to help others because it's not a bad thing to talk about whatever happens at home. Child abuse is a worldwide problem that needs to stop. Thought it can be a scary thing, and it is a lot better living happily than living in fear. Imagine a 10-year-old wrote that. Stop masking your pain. It will bleed through someone else's in your life. Well, that's pretty touching and very compelling poem, if I do say so myself. Forgive me there for a second. I hate this. It drives me crazy. So I encourage you, that 10-year-old that wrote that poem, I think about when I was 10 years old myself and how scared I was and not wanting to talk to anybody about what happened to me. In fact, I was scared to death. Oh my God, when I think about it now, I can't believe the memories I have from my childhood. I can't believe it, how detailed and how it was like yesterday, how I can think back. Some of you might appreciate this in the same manner that I do. I'm not sure, but coming from myself, that's me. That's how I can remember the past like it was yesterday. I can't believe how far back I remember, including my abuse. And I think about the years that I shoved it aside, or I didn't want to think about it. But that was detrimental to my future because all it did was leave me on a road to, well, anger and self-destruction. And that's certainly no way to live your life, as I've figured out, and to what's brought me to this point here now at the Gatehouse, where I am actually grateful and happy to say that I'm on my new journey. And I can actually say I know who I am for once in my life. I don't have the fear anymore. I've let go. I'm not angry with myself like I used to be. And I put myself in a place I never, ever thought possible. And I'm telling you, if you apply these principles that I've talked about, have been talking about, you can find your way. But again, I can say again, I can't emphasize, it takes a lot of work. And you need to apply yourself to that. Now, past, I've talked about fear. And with that fear, I can't talk enough about this, but with that fear, I've talked about anger. And with that fear, that anger kind of resides side by side. And if you can find a way to let go of that anger, as I've been talking about, you will find your way, or at least find a more constructive way of conducting yourself so it's not so destructive to yourself or others. Now, I would like, at some point, I want to dip into the inner child. And if you dip in your inner child, I've kind of briefly talked about this in the past episode about your inner child. Your inner child is so important because your inner child is, in some aspects, or actually in a lot of aspects, well, in my case, maybe other cases as well, but in my case in particular, as I've described and talked about, is what's held me back. My inner child was so angry and hurt from my abuse that my inner child just basically shut me out. And I'm just giving you an example of what your inner child can do to you if your inner child shuts the door on the rest of you in the world. That's what happens. So if you find a way to talk to that inner child, which I really looking forward to, actually I can't wait to get into the inner child because
I've spoken with my inner child, and I haven't talked to my inner child in more years than I care to mention. And my inner child has basically let me know, in my own view or to my own self, my inner child has basically reaffirmed myself that, yeah, that I am human, and that did happen to me, and it's all right. You can let it go, and there is a future you can move on. And that's totally profound as far as I'm concerned. Like, I can't believe that I'm hearing that for myself, and that my inner child has spoken to me in that manner, and my inner child is finally telling me to let go of this stuff from the past. And I know probably to some of that may sound kind of weird or totally off the wall, but I'm not really being off the wall. I'm telling you that if you've been through this experience as I have and many others have done, if you talk to your inner child, I think your inner child will tell you more than you realize about yourself, especially about yourself that you've had tucked away all these years. And you forget that when this abuse happened to you, your whole thoughts and perceptions of reality and time all changed. And I won't say, and I'm not going to say for the better, I'm going to say for the worse. Because initially your childhood was snuffed away from you. As like I know for myself as an example, I know that when that happened to me, I basically put myself on a shell. And as I've described in previous episodes that I've done, like for example, I talked about baseball, I talked about fishing, for example. I just stopped doing all that stuff. I just didn't do it anymore. Didn't think I deserved it. As an example, as I've described about, like, for example, like holidays in the beginning, when I was talking about the beginning of this program, like my birthdays and Christmas. I know so many people can easily relate to this. They've been through this process. Because I've met many other survivors that have gone through the same process, and I've had pretty much similar thought process that I've had in regards to how we reacted to what happened to us. And it's simply mind-numbing and mind-blowing that people, or rather survivors, will react this way. And I think about what we've missed because of this. Like our childhood, for example. Things I've missed out on. This is not a great example, but I know that when this happened to me, when I put all that stuff aside, but I even went even more extreme, because I know that how I could deal with it. Well, one other thing I would do, for example, especially when I got into the workforce, that was my way of coping too, because I would work and I would work and I'd work just to forget about it. Or if I want to go even more extreme, I would resort to drugs and alcohol as a form of escape. And that worked for, well, it was an escape. It certainly never worked. It was the final outcome because it didn't resolve anything. All it did was make things worse when I come to think about it. And never come to any resolution with myself whatsoever. It just made it worse. It made it worse over a period of time. So by applying the steps that I've talked about, for example, that is another way that you can get yourself out of this hole. And I really, really encourage you to try, at least try this, what I've described. And if you don't understand, well, you can email me at personaltransformation@gatehouse.org, or you can email thegatehouse.org, and we can give you information will help you on the steps as I've described throughout this process to help you with this, to get past this triggering thing. And it's such a big thing. Like, you know, people, I think most people, as like with myself, never, until I recognized what triggers were, only because I came here. I mean, I knew I was set off sometimes, but I never even looked at it. And I never took a second glance at it. Honestly, I never did. I just, whatever reaction I carried out was just plain and simple reaction because I did not understand or comprehend what was going on. Now that I understand what's going on or comprehend what's going on with myself through the steps I've talked about, at least I have a basis for that I can deal with these triggering issues. And I'm telling you out there the same thing I'm telling you. If you apply what I've talked about or if you can find another way to deal with those triggers, you can get past this. So next week, I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to definitely going to fall back on what we've talked about already. I'm going to keep falling back on what we've covered. And it's so important that we do that in order to stay on track. I'm just trying to think if I should come back a little bit more here. I wonder if I should talk about. Where is it? Yeah, you know what? I don't think I'm going to leave that. What we're going to talk about next week, I've kind of touched base on it. Here and there, I keep mentioning it. I'm talking about it. I'm talking about anger and emotional regulation or emotional baggage that may set you off. Notice how there's kind of like a theme here, how I'm building this up. All these things that make you feel and behave in a certain way. Can you see that? Can you notice that? What I've been talking about, how all these steps I've been talking about, I'm building up to basically what I'm trying to do. To get you to understand is that you have feelings, and by finding those feelings, when you sort them out, then that's your path for healing. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I also want you to recognize too this as well. Most importantly, I want you to recognize that you're not alone. There's other survivors out there, and there is help out there for you. But you have to take it upon yourself to do that. If you want it bad enough, then you'll do it. But if you don't want to do it, you'll do it in your own time. I'm certainly not going to pressure you to do it. I'm just wanting to understand that there's help out there, and there's caring people that are willing to help you to get past this. And with a little bit of work, you can actually achieve those goals and not wanting to feel like you feel anymore. And I'm here to tell you that you can do that. And I'm an example of that. And I will do whatever I can to get the word out that is possible. I'm here, I'm now, I'm real. I believe full-heartedly, what I'm doing is the right thing. And I believe that if you take these practices as I'm describing to you, that you can move forward as I have. And I'm a good prime example of that right now, because I'm telling you, if I was feeling like I was 4 years ago when I came here, trust me, I would not be sitting here giving myself all, telling you telling you about the process I went through just to get to the point where I am now. It's fully worth it. I encourage you to try it. Some of these steps I've described, and I'm telling you, over a period of time, it'll help you. So as I described, you can email me at personaltransformation@thegatehouse.org, or you can email thegatehouse.org, and we can give you help to get past this issue, what we've been talking about. So I'm going to sign off now, and I wish you all a good night and a good week, and stay grounded, take care of yourself. Most importantly, take care of yourself. You're not alone, and I care. There is people out there that do care. So have a great week, and I'll talk to you next week. Have a good week. Bye for now.